Welcome into this week's edition of More Than Marketing. I'm Rob Johnson, and this week is an interesting week. We're out here in Baltimore, Maryland, and joining me on the show is Rob Johnstone. He is sitting in with me as we are getting ready to do an interview. And before I say anything else, I'm just going to turn it over to him and allow him to do this this introduction.
Perfect. I think number three time on, or third time on the podcast, so I'm excited to be here. I'm super excited to be here with John Emmett from Zenyo Jiu-Jitsu in Baltimore, Maryland. Not only do we get to kind of showcase who John is, but I want to just go into my background with John. John is the first person I ever did traditional Brazilian jiu-jitsu with, like first coach, first class I've ever walked in on where I had to wear a gi with John. And he's quite a mentor in my life. He's taught me, you know, some of the most important aspects of my game. I'm a deep Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner. I do it, you know, multiple times a week, and I got the battle scars to prove it too. There's so many concepts that I've learned from this guy that I still use every single day. I teach, we'll probably talk about it throughout here, but the eyeball escape is, and just his framing concepts on a regular basis. So John has a gym out here in Baltimore, Premier Gym. He's doing a lot of good things. He's done really, really well so far, and we're really happy to talk to him. So John, I'm going to lead it to you and go ahead and introduce yourself to the podcast.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, good. Well, we appreciate you taking the time to sit down and do kind of a longer explanation of Zenyo and start off with a bit of an origin story. So what I want to do, and what we particularly do with a lot of our guests, is kind of go back to the beginning. So why don't we start with what led you into jiu-jitsu and where you started, because I know you've moved around the country a bunch, so I'm interested in hearing about it.
Yeah, it's always an interesting question about how people get introduced to jiu-jitsu and how they start. And you know, it's been a long time since I first came into jiu-jitsu, learned about jiu-jitsu. It's probably been 25 years. I started practicing a little more than 20 years ago. And I was hanging out with a friend one night, and he turned on pay-per-view, and the UFC happened to be on. And like everybody else back in that time, I watched the UFC for the first time, and was introduced to Royce Gracie, and was just mesmerized by his ability to fight in a different style, in a different way than I'd ever seen before. He wasn't really punching and kicking people, and people were quitting against him, and I didn't understand why. And I didn't understand the thing about submissions. I'd wrestled when I was a kid, but there weren't any submissions. And so seeing him, you know, apply these chokes and arm locks and stuff to these huge guys that were 50 to 100 pounds heavier than him was just like really fascinating. So that's what started leading me to look into it and start training.
And then, so when you started training, where were you at?
I lived in a small town in Colorado called Durango. It was 10,000 people, and there wasn't a jiu-jitsu school there. There was just a Filipino martial arts school there. So it took me a while to go into the class, but eventually I did. And like everybody else at that time, they were starting to try to incorporate mixed martial arts, what's become mixed martial arts and the Ultimate Fighting Championship, into their style of martial art. And we were sort of like at the forefront of bringing jiu-jitsu to that class.
Okay. The blue belt leadership days?
No, it was before that. These guys didn't have any jiu-jitsu, you know? The closest ranked person at that time was more than an hour away. The nearest black belt was probably in Denver, which was 8 hours away. There was probably Pedro Sauer in Salt Lake City, which is probably another 8 hours away. So in that area of the country, right, there was really nothing. It was just guys that got together and just started copying and watching tape and trying to figure out what was going on.
Not YouTube, huh?
No YouTube.
Just straight up tape.
After a time, you left Colorado, and where did that take you?
I ended up in Dallas, and when I was in Dallas, I worked as a professional photographer. I was a freelance photographer for a newspaper, and then I found a school there, and I joined the school there. It was Mulder Mixed Martial Arts, and I trained there for 5 years and got my blue belt there.
Okay. Yeah. And what was that process like starting something new and then leveling up? So like, I know for a lot of people that are just trying to wrap their heads around the time commitment and just the amount of intensity that goes into jiu-jitsu. So what was that like to rank up for the first time and go through that process?
I think jiu-jitsu's, you know, changed drastically since when I started, and it's much more structured and it's much more organized, and it's the progression is a lot easier than it used to be when I started. Basically, when I started, it was just mayhem. It was just some guys that got together in a room and tried to beat each other up and then figured out on the fly what worked and what didn't work. I mean, there were no rules. All submissions were legal. You could do whatever you wanted to do as long as it made the other person quit. You know? Okay. And it was just kind of crazy. One of the goals of my gym is not to have my students have to go through such a process where you learn only the hard way. You know, there's much better ways to learn. There's much better ways to improve than just beating the hell out of each other.
Okay.
Yeah. I started to learn that and I started to understand that when I left Colorado and I went to Dallas and I started training at a real school with the black belt who had history, who had teaching, who had lineage and was able to show me, you know, the skills and the methods of jiu-jitsu.
And did you feel like that was sort of an evolutionary process, that it just kind of took time for the system to fall in place where there was a little bit more organization as time went on?
For sure. I mean, the most important thing was getting a legitimate instructor to help you. You know, when we were in Colorado, the instructors were good, but they didn't know any jiu-jitsu. You know, they were learning jiu-jitsu. I was learning jiu-jitsu. We were all just learning it together and putting the pieces together. But when I came to Dallas, then, you know, my instructor knew jiu-jitsu. He was a teacher of jiu-jitsu. And so, yeah, it was okay. A much better situation as far as being jiu-jitsu specific went. He runs a big gym in Dallas still. He's got a really great place, got a ton of students, does mixed martial arts, does jiu-jitsu, boxing, Muay Thai.
Yeah, I was going to ask too, like competition back in, you know, the early days of it. Were you actively competing? And if you were, what were those competitions like?
I wasn't. I didn't compete at all until I moved to Dallas. You know, I think a couple of the guys that were at the gym in Colorado did a couple of like in-house competitions. But back then, at least in that area, there really weren't any jiu-jitsu tournaments. There weren't any jiu-jitsu competitions. It was like you either fought in the cage like the UFC or you didn't. You just trained in the gym.
Okay.
Yeah.
So from how long were you in Dallas training at that school?
5 years.
5 years. And then where did you soldier on to after?
I ended up moving to Florida. I got another newspaper job in Florida, and I moved to Florida and was a photographer in Florida for 6 years, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was the training scene like when you were in Florida?
It was great. Florida is where I met my instructor, Marcelo Pereira. He's 2-time world champion. I think he's 3-time Masters world champion. He's been the best influence on my jiu-jitsu and my life that I could ask for. He's an amazing instructor, amazing person, and he's taught me an incredible amount of life skills and mat skills.
So just for people that might not be familiar with the system of moving up in jiu-jitsu, when someone is a world champion, what type of time does it take to commit to jiu-jitsu to be that skilled?
So Marcelo, who's world champion, multiple-time world champion, started when he was 7 years old. And then he won his black belt world championship when he was 19 years old.
Okay.
So it was 12 years for him to get to that level where he could compete at the black belt. The highest ranked jiu-jitsu guy was a purple belt, and he was running his own school. He's my friend Fletch, and I started training with Fletch. And I trained with him for a while, and Fletch's teacher is Marcelo, who became my teacher. And then Marcelo was in Brazil and moved back from Brazil. And then when he came back, he opened his school, and then eventually I started training at Marcelo's school. And I was fortunate enough to train with Marcelo for 2 years before I moved from Florida to Virginia.
And what prompted the move to Virginia?
My wife and I were both working at the same newspaper in Florida, and we were kind of ready for a change, and she got hired for a job in Virginia, and we moved to Virginia Beach.
Okay.
I was really lucky at that time in Florida. I had a friend from Virginia Beach who was coming down, and he was training at the school that I was training at. We'd trained jiu-jitsu on holidays and stuff. He'd come down with his family for Thanksgiving or Christmas or something, and then he would get together and we would train at my jiu-jitsu school. At that time he was a purple belt. I was a blue belt when I first met him, and then he owned a jiu-jitsu school, a martial arts school in Virginia Beach. And so when I moved from Florida, I actually moved to Virginia Beach because of my friend Scott, and then I started teaching at Scott's school and taught at Scott's school for 3 years.
Okay. That's incredible. So what was it like to go from a student role to a teacher role?
It was super challenging. Yeah, it was super challenging going from focusing on myself to then focusing on others who were trying to learn jiu-jitsu and understand jiu-jitsu. Whenever I felt like my jiu-jitsu journey was relatively was simple, fun, relatively easy for me to progress. If I showed up to class and I paid attention and I worked, then I knew that I would get better. And some of the guys that I started teaching with really struggled. And things that I thought were really easy and really basic were a super challenge for them. So it created a real sort of moment of like, wow, like I need to figure this out in a different way than just on a personal level so that I can share it with these other people so that they can get it themselves, feel the same thing and do the same things that I was able to do.
And that probably helped you out quite a bit because now you were building up your partners too to train against you.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely part of the process where everybody in the gym gets better and it constantly, you know, keeps that progression going.
There's a common philosophy amongst us to, you know, as you get better, as you go forward, grab somebody else and bring them with you.
Yeah.
And I think that that's, even in my coaching, that's kind of, you know, been something I follow. Like, I want everybody else around me to be better too. And probably played into, I think we all get that same feeling once we start coaching a little more.
Yeah, it's a big part of our philosophy at the school, you know, is that, as they say, we rise by lifting others. So everybody else gets better. We get better. If you help your students get better, they challenge you to get better. All the training partners get better. It's the best.
I think that's one of the things that you and I were talking earlier about, people being fearful about doing something new. And I think that's one of the philosophies that I think people would resonate with more, is understanding that when they go into a gym, whether it's for jiu-jitsu or Muay Thai or whatever it is, the answer to what's going to happen should be, well, you're going to progress and we're going to help you, rather than being fearful about stepping through the door. Do you experience a lot of people stepping into fear or feeling like it's not going to go well the first time?
I mean, I know for me personally, when I very first started and the first time that I thought about training martial arts, it took me a long time to get in the door. You know, there's always this worry about what it's going to be like and how it's going to play out. And in an evolutionary sense, you know, we're programmed to see danger. We're programmed to be worried. We're programmed to make sure that we're going to be in a safe environment. And so then you add bringing a single individual into already an established group. They have to come into the group. They have to bond with the group. That's challenging enough just on a personal level. Then on top of that, you add martial arts into it, where you're fighting, you're doing this, what can be considered an aggressive thing, in addition to having to join this group that already makes you uncomfortable. So it can really be, hard for people to jump in and get on the mat.
Thinking just from my own like personal journey, just jumping on there, like I remember when I first started training martial arts, like mixed martial arts, and you know, jiu-jitsu nogi there in the background. Yeah, I spent a good year driving by the gym without ever stepping my foot into it. You hear that story a lot.
Yeah.
One of our guys up in Virginia Beach, Abe, I think, what's his story? He spent 2 years walking by the gym and then finally pulled up the courage to walk through the door.
I think it took me about 2 years to step on the mat from the first time I started understanding what jiu-jitsu was and started getting interested in jiu-jitsu. I think, like I said, you know, they didn't have a jiu-jitsu school. I think if they did have a jiu-jitsu school, I would have gotten on the mat much faster. But they were, you know, practicing weapons and sticks and different kinds of fighting and kickboxing and stuff that I wasn't super interested in, so I was a little worried that there wasn't going to be a lot of jiu-jitsu. But then there's still also just a worry of, you know, starting martial arts can be a little intimidating. You know, that's why I make it a super mission at the school to have the best environment possible for beginners to come in and realize that we're here to help you. Right, we're here to welcome you. We're here to make you feel comfortable. We're here to make you feel safe. You're not going to be doing anything that you don't feel comfortable doing. You know, the path is you show up and you progress at your own level and you progress at your own pace. And the team and the group is there to help you do your best.
very little barriers to entry with jiu-jitsu. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, you just have to show up. Especially at my school, the beginner program is based on you don't even have to have a uniform. You just show up. You can wear sweats and a t-shirt. Everybody owns sweats and a t-shirt. You show up, you're barefooted, you walk in the gym, you say, I want to try it out. There's no barrier at all to get started.
Your size doesn't matter. Your physical abilities don't matter. Nothing matters in jiu-jitsu.
No, I have kids that started. I have kids that have started as young as 3 with me. One of my students is 64 years old. We have men, we have women, we have teenagers, we have small people, big people, strong people, weak people, every size that you can imagine. You know what I mean? Every background, every experience that you can imagine. And they all come in and they all find a place in jiu-jitsu.
That's incredible. And that's what I like about it too, is it's such a low barrier of entry, and then also such a wide array of people that can do it, from 3 to, say, a student who's 64. Like, that's incredible. So when you moved from Virginia Beach to Baltimore, what was the mindset in starting Zenyo?
You know, Marcelo, when I used to train with Marcelo in Florida, even back then, told me that I should open my own gym. You know, you should teach, you should open your own gym. And I just didn't want to. I love jiu-jitsu, and I love jiu-jitsu for myself. You know what I mean? And my goal wasn't to teach, and my goal wasn't to open my own school. In fact, I was really reluctant to do that. I remember one conversation I had with my wife. I was still in Florida. She had already moved to Virginia, and I still had my job as a photographer, and she was there as a writer, and I didn't see a bridge to leave Florida and go to Virginia, you know, and I didn't see jiu-jitsu as a viable career option. And we had, I think it took me 9 months to move up there from the time she moved. And then we had a conversation one day, and I said to her, like, what do you want me to do? You want me to quit my job and move here and teach jiu-jitsu and make $10,000 a year? Like, that's not going to work. And she's like, yeah, you should do that. You know what I mean? Like, if we can be together, do that, and then we'll see what happens. And I was like, oh. And then I talked to some of my friends, and they're like, you should just go. And then I did. And then it's just been an amazing journey since then.
That's incredible.
I'm glad you did. I know I don't get to come here and train with you. I've been lucky enough to come like almost at least once a year, sometimes twice a year. And I make a point because you're like, honestly, I've been to how many different gyms now? And your philosophy of teaching jiu-jitsu and your style of it is so much different from everybody else. It's everybody brings their things to the table. But yours is different. I think it's, I really appreciate it. And I definitely like to hear more about, you know, your style of teaching jiu-jitsu and why you teach the way you do and what led you there.
You know, it's all influenced by Marcelo and Marcelo's style. And he was the first instance in jiu-jitsu where I realized that there was more to jiu-jitsu than just like winning and losing and having technique. You know, and he taught me a different way to look at jiu-jitsu and a different way to practice jiu-jitsu and a different way to be in jiu-jitsu. Before I met Marcelo, I was pretty mean. I wasn't a very nice guy on the mat. I could be rough and I could, you know, smash people like a lot. And smash. And everything was like, you know. serious hardcore, you know, and the schools that I came from, the style that I came from, there were no rules. You just did whatever worked. If you did something that made a guy tap, then like, fine, that was good. You know, people would say things like, if you don't like it, don't let him do it to you. And there were a lot of injuries, a lot of people getting beat up, a lot of people quitting. It was just like a bad environment. When I got to Marcelo and got to train with a true world champion, someone who was the best of the best at jiu-jitsu and had trained with the best of the best of the best, it was just a completely different environment. You know, there were rules, there were structures, there were, you worked to help each other and you worked to protect each other. And that's the first time I ever heard like asshole jiu-jitsu. That guy's got asshole jiu-jitsu, you know? And I was like, what is that? Like, I've never heard this before, you know? Like, I thought jiu-jitsu was jiu-jitsu. You're supposed to like twist somebody up and make them hurt and tap them out.
So you were the typical mat bully.
I think I was a little bit of a mat bully, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was definitely like the gym enforcer.
You were the enforcer? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely see that. There's a time and a place for a gym enforcer, that's for sure.
And then I met Marcelo and it just really like changed everything, you know? It was like, all of a sudden you realize that there's a reason it's called the gentle art, you know? And part of that is when you work with people, you have to be gentle with them. You have to take care of them. Jiu-jitsu is meant to break somebody. And if you don't do it with the right mindset and the right love in your heart, you're going to hurt people if you're not gentle with them, you know? And you need to do that. You need to be gentle. You need to take care of each other. You need to help each other grow. And that's what he really brought to me. And then on top of that, right, he just has incredible technical details and really helped me to see what was behind techniques.
That's what I really appreciate about your teaching style is the way you break it down, and I can see where you got it from now, because you go into every single detail, and you don't do it in a drawn out way, because there's people going to every single detail and they don't, you know, takes too long, let's just say that. But yeah, I've always appreciated the way you break down the details. I think you make students more aware of their body than a lot of jiu-jitsu coaches do.
I think that's the most important thing. You know what I mean? You have to have the mechanics of your body before you can try to start doing a bunch of jiu-jitsu. You know, so I focus a lot on mechanics and efficiency and leverage and angle and just, you know.
Creating a frame. That's something you've always taught me really well, is proper framework, how to build the structures, you know, to keep me in place.
Yeah.
Defend off of.
You're much... Most people, right, live a very sedentary lifestyle. A lot of sitting at the office, a lot of sitting in the car, a lot of sitting watching TV. They don't get a lot of exercise. And the exercise that they do get is very motion repetitive. They walk or they run or they're on a treadmill or they lift weights a certain way. They don't really challenge themselves as far as their movement capability and their movement skills. There's such a variety of ways that the human body can move, rotating, rolling, doing all this different stuff that traditional exercise really doesn't address, you know. And in addition to that, traditional exercise sort of is the opposite of what jiu-jitsu is. It's like inefficiency is the goal, you know. How hard can you work? How much can you effort can you burn? How much calories and all these kind of things. Whereas jiu-jitsu, it's the exact opposite. You have to be as efficient as you can possibly be, because you have somebody else who's completely trying to interfere with your ability to do what you're wanting to do. If you're not efficient, it's not going to work.
I want to talk about the beginning of Zenyo. So when did Zenyo open?
We opened Zenyo in December of 2015.
Okay. And what's the reasoning behind the name?
So Zenyo is a short form of Sarayoko Zenyo, which means maximum efficiency, minimum effort. Zenyo also means best use. And so Sarayoko Zenyo can also be translated as best use of physical and mental energy. I wanted the gym to be something more than just a workout place. And I wanted it to have a philosophy and an ideology behind it. And it comes from judo. And these are the principles of judo. The three principles of judo are mutual welfare, mutual benefit, maximum efficiency, minimum effort, and then gentleness. And, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu comes from judo. And Marcelo has a traditional approach to jiu-jitsu and teaches a lot of judo and follows a lot of the judo ideology. And I do too. I really like that method, that style.
So a new student signs up day one. What can they expect?
I think the most important thing that they can expect is to feel welcome. You know, from the first moment they walk in the door, everybody's going to come up to them. Everybody's going to say hi to them. They're going to shake their hands. They're going to welcome them to class. Not just me, not just the instructor, but every single student in the school is going to do it. And they're going to realize, like, this is, you know, something different than I expected.
It's a community.
It's very much a community. It's very much our culture where we're here to work together. We're here to help each other, and we're here to make everybody feel like they're part of the group.
It's family. Definitely a family. Even in my experience too. Guys I'm closest to are the people I'm with on the mat, because we're doing something pretty intimate together too. You're putting your life in somebody else's hands. If it was realistic, you know, it could come down to that. So, you know.
Yeah, you really have to trust your partners and establish trust with your partners. And that begins, right, from the first moment you walk in the gym. Somebody making you feel comfortable, somebody making you feel welcome. And not just one time, but every single day, every single class, you know. Everybody, we come in, everybody shakes hands to start class. We shake hands to end class. every single class, every single day. You know what I mean? And it's an important part of who we are and what we do.
And so you're coming up on the 4-year anniversary of Xenia, which is incredible to think about it. Your journey from Colorado to Dallas to Florida to Virginia to Baltimore, and now you have this gym that is growing exponentially, and people are getting more and more details about it. And well, I'm interested. So in the 4 years that it's been open, what is one or two interesting stories that have come about since the gym has been open, whether it's with students or just in general?
You know, it's been an amazing journey. And when I started jiu-jitsu, I never thought I'd get my blue belt. And then I got my blue belt, and then I thought blue belt would be it, you know? And then at a certain point, well, let's back up. The very first time I ever did jiu-jitsu, I realized that, like, this is the coolest thing I've ever done, right? And I wanted to do jiu-jitsu and train jiu-jitsu in such a way that I never quit. Didn't matter how much I did it or how little I did it or where or anything like that. All I wanted to do was progress in such a fashion that I never quit. You know, now I'm 21 years into it, and I'm more passionate now about it than when I started. And so that's been an amazing journey. And then to progress through the ranks and then start teaching and then open my own school, it's been amazingly rewarding. The one thing that I never thought I would teach, I never thought I'd have my own school, all this stuff was not part of my expectation. It just kind of took on a life of its own and just kept growing and growing and growing. And, you know, so when I first started teaching, it was like, okay, I'll only teach adults, no kids. And then I started teaching kids. And then I was like, I really like teaching the kids, you know? And it was like an amazing thing. And so being able to teach the kids has been like wild. It's, you know, they come in. And just to see the transformation they go through over a certain period of time. They come in, they're wild, they're rowdy, they're unfocused, they need discipline, they need structure. And, you know, a lot of them are kind of soft and not physical and not athletic. And you would think that some of these kids wouldn't last in jiu-jitsu because jiu-jitsu is so tough. But then you see the ones that last and grow and change and adapt to it. It's really just an amazing experience and really fulfilling to be part of that journey to see them become little champions.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And what's kind of been the biggest takeaway from seeing kids progress on that front? Has anything surprised you about it or caught you off guard in watching, let's say, a 5-year-old to, I guess, now a 9-year-old seeing that type of progression?
I think the most impressive thing is just to watch them grow in confidence and ability. You know, a lot of them come in and you'll have them do front rolls and back rolls and these other things that they haven't done before. And you'll have them do, especially boys, you know, cartwheels, and they've never been asked to do a cartwheel before. And there's sort of this mentality of like, oh, I can't. I'm not any good. I can't. And then I just coach them like, if you think it, you can do it. You know what I mean? You shouldn't say you can't before you try. You should just try. And being bad is part of the process. You know what I mean? Everybody starts bad. And then you progress from there. And if you keep doing it, you'll get good. You know? And so watching these kids get good has just been amazing.
So how do you answer the objection, like when someone comes in and they suck, right? Because it's their first time. They've never done it before. And they went in thinking that they were tougher than they actually were, and then they kind of got a wake up call, and now they're like, all, you know, like someone took the air out of their balloon, right? So how do you answer that when they're like, well, now I can't do this?
You know, I think those days have changed a fair amount from when jiu-jitsu started. You know, it's so established now; it's been around so long, and the UFC is such a big and popular thing now that jiu-jitsu is respected and people understand what it's like. They watch it on TV all the time. They see people get tapped by arm bars. They see people get choked out. They see people lose to jiu-jitsu all the time. So 10 years ago, maybe even longer than that, you'd have people come in that would have that mentality, like, I'm a really tough guy and this jiu-jitsu stuff's not going to work on me and I'm going to find out and prove it. And then they would get deflated very fast, you know. Some 200-pound guy would... Like Marcelo, my instructor, is 130 pounds. He would buzzsaw them in 2 seconds, you know, have them tapping left and right and screaming and yelping and, and thinking they're tough guys, you know, and they realize like, oh, I'm not a tough guy. That kind of person doesn't really last in jiu-jitsu. You have to be a little bit realistic with yourself. Otherwise, it's just, you know.
And have you seen that humbling experience where people...
What I see, the most amazing thing that I see in jiu-jitsu is people that come in that don't really have confidence in themselves. Mm-hmm. They haven't been into team sports. They haven't been successful in team sports. They never get picked to be part of the team. They're always like the last ones picked and left out. And they're kind of a little downtrodden, you know? And then they come to jiu-jitsu and all of a sudden it's like different, you know? It's physical, but the athleticism of jiu-jitsu is different. It's, you don't have to be fast. You don't have to particularly be strong. You don't have to be particularly super coordinated. You can always like adapt and change things to make them work for you in your own way, you know? So some people are never going to be any good at basketball. It's just not in their genes. They're never going to be any good in football. It's just not in the cards for them. You know, they're not big enough, they're not strong enough, they're not fast enough, they're never going to play in the NBA. You know what I mean? It's not even within the realm of possibility. They can be super good at jiu-jitsu because they can change it however they want to change it to make it work for themselves. So they can be little, they can be big, they can be fast, they can be slow. You know, jiu-jitsu is so interesting and so creative and so adaptable that, you know, everybody can make it work for them.
So one of the things that I find interesting for myself, like when I get into the position where I'm surrounded by people and I'm the one that people come to for answers. And sometimes it feels like, okay, well, there's no one that I can go to for answers. So like when you're in that teacher role, who do you talk to? Who do you bounce ideas off of when you're kind of at the top of your gym, so to speak?
Obviously I always talk to Marcelo, and Marcelo and I talk regularly and he helps me a ton. And I always bounce ideas off of him. And then my friend Scott, who I used to work with in Virginia, is the same way. I talk to him, and he's a wealth of knowledge. And, you know, but the hardest part about teaching jiu-jitsu is not really the technical aspect so much of it. It's more of, like, the learning and personal aspect of it. You know, usually the amount of knowledge and the amount of skill that I have is exponentially more than my student is ready to absorb. So I have to pare it down in such a way that it's useful for them in that moment and in that time at the level that they're at so that they can understand it and progress.
So, John, I think you were going to tell us kind of the story about getting your black belt too, because I know that that's important to you. It's changed a lot of things. So
yeah, it was one of the most special moments in my life, in my jiu-jitsu career by far. You know, like I said, when I started as a white belt, I never thought I'd get a blue belt. So to get my black belt... was really special, and it was something that I worked a long time for. It took 14 years for me to get my black belt. I was promoted on the podium at the Master Worlds after winning the brown belt division by Marcelo and by Scott, and it was great. It was actually my first time ever doing an IBJJF tournament, and we went out to California and I won, and then they surprised me and promoted me to black belt on the podium, and it was a really wonderful experience and something that, you know, is really something that I worked very hard for and something that means a lot to me. It means the most that it came from such great people and great instructors like Marcelo and Scott.
So let me get this straight one more time. Your first IBJJF you've ever done, won a world championship.
It was the first IBJJF tournament that I'd ever done before. And, I flew from Florida to California and we went and I competed. I think I had 4 or 5 matches.
Was that when you hurt your shoulder?
No, I hurt my shoulder when I was a black belt.
Okay.
I think my second year as a black belt. And so, it was awesome. You know, all my friends from Florida were there. I had friends from Virginia that were there. All these people, I even saw people from Dallas who were there. All these people throughout my jiu-jitsu career all of a sudden were at this one point in time all together, you know, at one of the biggest tournaments in the world. And I was fortunate enough that I won. And then on top of that, to get promoted on the podium in a surprise, the black belt was amazing.
That's awesome. That's really cool, and that especially that I'm sure the moment was overwhelming. You won your first tournament, and I can't even imagine the dynamics of that. That sounds... The
first IBJJF tournament, it's a big deal. That's being in an IBJJF, it's a mental game too, of everything else. Being in the bullpen, oh, those are nerve-wracking to me.
Yeah, I've only watched, so I've never and will never participate. I'm kind of in that camp of like, I don't think I can level up to there.
So. I don't know about that. Just train.
Yeah,
just
right.
Do you believe in the philosophy of a black belt is a white belt that never quits?
For sure.
Yeah, I think so too.
No doubt. So
I'm going to re-listen to this podcast for encouragement. So John, I want to dive a little bit deeper into Zenio and really just talk about the current makeup of the gym and what really sticks out to you as a differentiator in your gym right now.
You know, the main thing that sticks out is the growth of the gym. From when I started moving to Baltimore, I didn't know a single person in Baltimore. I'd never been here. I just showed up, and then I had to go find a space. And then from there, I had to get students. I didn't have a website. I didn't have a Facebook. I didn't have anything. I just showed up and was like, I teach jiu-jitsu. And I started teaching at another small martial arts school, and I rented mat space from them. And all of a sudden, I'd had one student, and then two students, and then three students. And, you know, it was a super challenge getting it started from nothing. No background, no business skills, no marketing skills, you know, none of that. And like I said, I didn't have a website. I figured out, I had to do all that stuff by myself. Everything that I've done at the gym has pretty much been by myself. I created Facebook, I created Instagram, I created the website. I put all this stuff together. I started marketing, started trying to get students in the door. And it's just taken off. I went from, you know, no students to, you know, close to 100 students now. And from one class to, I think we have 5 classes on our schedule now. We have 2 kids class, a younger kids class, an older kids class, and then we have a beginner class, an all levels class, and an advanced class.
It's fantastic. So where do you feel like the gym is progressing towards? Like, what's your future plans for Zenio as you start moving forward?
I just want to keep growing the gym, and I want to teach the style of jiu-jitsu that. I guess you call traditional jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu is a complete martial art, right? That's what Zenyu is. Zenyu teaches jiu-jitsu as a complete martial art. It teaches takedowns. It teaches self-defense. It teaches sport techniques. It teaches all aspects of jiu-jitsu. You're not just going to get a piece of jiu-jitsu at Zenyu. You're going to get the complete jiu-jitsu at Zenyu. You're going to come in. You're going to learn how to protect yourself if people are trying to punch you and hit you and knock you on the ground. You're going to learn how to take people down. You're going to learn how to do judo. You're going to learn to wrestle. And then you're going to learn all the skills of jiu-jitsu.
I see you putting up on the social media a lot, like all your pages. You do like the multiple opponents. I think I've even seen where you've, you know, put people, have them put their hands in their belts and not being able to use those arms. I think that's really unique. That, you know, some gyms do every once in a while, but I feel like it's a part of your regular curriculum is to kind of limit what the students have to their ability so they can strengthen elsewhere. You know, if you're not using your arms, your guard's going to get a lot better because you're only able to use your legs. You've taught me that. That's something I still do. And then it's the multiple opponents on one. Like, okay, well, you know, something about the jiu-jitsu environment is that there is a sense of control, like a lot of level of control. It's a safe environment. And most places you go, you're not going to learn what it's like if you're getting attacked by 2 or 3 people from every single angle, because a lot of gyms have went too far competition-based. But I always see on your videos you're doing that. You have 2-on-1, 3-on-1. I think that's unique.
I try to, you know, teach in such a way that it creates different ideas for people and responses. You know, Zenyu is not just a martial arts academy. It's a learning academy. I teach people how to learn things. They just happen to be learning jiu-jitsu with me. But the most important thing is through us, they learn how to learn anything. They learn the techniques of learning, you know, and then they can apply them however they want to in their life.
Do you feel that as you've been teaching jiu-jitsu, especially here in Baltimore, if we just kind of zoom in and look at this detailed case, do you feel that because of the discipline, because of how you're teaching them, because of the learning aspects, that it's spreading out into more aspects of their lives rather than just mixed martial arts?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It spreads to all levels of their life. And, you know, that's the path of jiu-jitsu. That's the history of jiu-jitsu. That was the purpose of jiu-jitsu. You know, when Jigoro Kano, who started judo, he started with jiu-jitsu, he started judo, and then it became Brazilian jiu-jitsu. What he said was, it's not just learning martial arts, it's learning to perfect yourself and to contribute something to society. That's something that I believe very much. And so what we do on the mat should carry off the mat. I have some of my students tell me the handshake thing has really changed their social life for them. They used to be kind of nervous and awkward around meeting new people, and now they just walk up and they shake hands and they say, like, hi. And they said they get completely different reactions than they used to get. And I've had surgeons who study with me, and they said that the way that we do the process at Zenyu has impacted the way that they perform surgery. You know, they're learning to be efficient. They're learning to be gentle. They're learning to be patient, and they're learning to look at skills in a new way.
I think, like, the diversity of jiu-jitsu is really unique. I mean, because there is everybody from every aspect of life. If you really want to go into a room and meet somebody from every turn, then you can step on a mat, because, you know, not just racial diversity, but economic diversity, idea diversity, it's all there located on the mat. I think it really kind of makes us better people because of that. But there is still a certain, like, every gym has, like, a build around it. Like, who is Zenyu for? Who would you say your students are?
I don't think it would be fair to say that Zenyu is for everybody, because I don't think it is for everybody. I think it's for people that want to come and they want to learn and they want to help others in addition to helping themselves. And so if someone wants to come in, maybe like I was in the past, and maybe was a little too mean for their own good, you know what I mean? They might not fit in well. We're not here to beat each other up. We're here to learn with each other and help each other, make sure that everybody progresses and that everybody's safe, and that we do jiu-jitsu to the best of everyone's own ability. We're not here just to smash people and make them learn the hard way. I think those days are gone. There's new, better methods to learn than that.
They're pretty short-lived, at least. You keep beating up your body that way, that's for sure.
Yeah. Where, you know, Zenyu focuses on building mental models that will help you develop your skills. It's more than just being physically tough and learning physical skills. You have to learn the mental skills. You have to learn the process of doing this. And you want to, you know, as they say, update the software without damaging the hardware. And so it's important that you train in such a way that you don't beat yourself up.
That's fantastic, John. I thank you for the time and just walking. I know John Stone knows a lot about your backstory, but for me, just walking me through the origin, I really appreciate that.
My pleasure. Thanks for the conversation.
All right, well, that'll wrap up this week's edition of More Than Marketing. Take care.